This is a slightly unusual event since they don't have Catalan elections every week, even though it might seem so. The format, I'm going to tell you about the format. We will start off with me welcoming you, so you've already had that bit. And then there will be a short introduction to what actually happened by Montserrat Gibernau, who's Professor of Politics at Queen Mary College, or as it was in my day, now called Queen Mary University of London. You're all right with that, you don't need a longer introduction than that, do you? Anyway, so Montserrat will give a brief overview of what actually happened and why indeed there were early elections. Then Didac Gutierrez Pérez, who is the coordinator of the Catalan Observatory here at the LSE, is going to talk about the international consequences of the whole thing. Then Walter Oppenheimer, who is the correspondent in London of El País, will talk about how Spain, or the rest of Spain, depending on your point of view, how Madrid needs to respond to all of that. Is that right?
More or less.
Then Elena Moya, who is an extremely distinguished financial journalist, is going to talk about the economic dimension of the whole issue. We're hoping that we will be joined by Anna Bosch, who is the correspondent of Spanish television here in London, who unfortunately, because of this trivial matter of the Leveson report, is tied up telling the Spanish people whether or not we plan to have press censorship in this country. So she may or may not arrive, I hope she does, and then we will come back to Montserrat Gibernau, who will talk about the future, more or less. I, of course, I'm a historian. I have enough trouble with the past, so I'll just sit here and enjoy. So, Montserrat.
Thank you very much, Paul, for inviting me, and also for organizing this very special occasion in which we can debate and analyze the consequences of the Catalan election on the 25th of November. I will be quite brief, and I will try to focus on two particular points. The first one is to respond to the question why there was an election only after 2 years after the government of Artur Mas was elected, and then what are, in my view, the main elements that have contributed to a somehow unexpected result, unexpected outcome, at least unexpected by some, okay, in the election of the 25th of November. The first point is quite brief. I think that I will be very kind of schematic, and I will be brief now because we plan to talk for about 10 minutes each of us, and then we want to have time for a discussion, for a debate. So sometimes I won't be very precise because obviously some of the things I will say will need further development. But to summarize, I consider that in year 2000, with the second mandate of Prime Minister Aznar, there was a return to neo-centralism and neoconservatism in Spain, something that resulted in Aznar's government having not being receptive to calls for a further development of autonomy in Catalonia and also in other parts of Spain. Okay? I think that in Catalonia in particular, there are at least three different factors that have contributed to the rise of secessionism. This is why we are all here, because secessionism has risen in Catalonia, and this was unexpected. It was unexpected, but the reasons for this rise of secessionism are clear. In my view, the first one is dissatisfaction with the current financial arrangement with Spain that really is based upon a generation of 8.5% of Catalan GDP accumulated every year as annual deficit. This is something which it's important. And okay, this is an economic reason. But then there are other reasons that have to do with identity, that have to do with perceptions of politics, that have to do with the aspiration of a sector, of a significant sector of the Catalan population to have a greater degree of autonomy, or maybe for some of them to pursue the idea of sovereignty. And this has been expressed first through the demonstration of 2010, if you remember, 1 million people in Barcelona. It was also expressed in the non-binding symbolic referendums that took place in many towns and cities in Catalonia, a referendum on independence, but a referendum that had, there was no point in that referendum because it was not binding. Also, in the sense of deep unhappiness and frustration resulting of the way in which the 2006 Estatute of Autonomy was really cut it down by the Congress. But also, I think, more important that this cutting down of the Estatute of Autonomy in the Spanish Congress, the thing that hurt it more, some sector of Catalan society, or that outraged even some Catalan people, is that even after having been cut down to make it compatible with the Spanish Constitution, the Estatute, and after being voted by the Catalan people, the Estatute was then taken into court, was challenged in the Spanish High Court of Justice. And 51% of the text of the Estatute was challenged by the Popular Party, and 48% was challenged by the Socialist Party. So it means that there was a challenge to the Estatute when it was already approved, sanctioned, even signed by the King. And that is something unprecedented in Europe, I can say. I mean, imagine, for example, that the Belfast Agreement, after having been approved, all the debates and everything else, and having been signed, then a few days after, the very same parties that have contributed to write it, they challenge it in court. It's something that's really quite outstanding. So this is a process that has resulted in a rise of secessionism that materialized in the 1.5 million demonstration in Barcelona that took place on the 11th of September. That was an unprecedented scene, and the current president, Artur Mas, decided to lead or take the opportunity and call for an election to see how much support an option that would defend the sovereignty of Catalonia would have. His compromise was, if the political parties that support sovereignty win the majority in that election that we had last Sunday, then he said that he would lead that process towards sovereignty, and that he would call a referendum in which Catalans could decide whether they wanted to have an independent Catalonia, or whether they wanted to remain in the status quo, or maybe other options that are not there as yet. So this is the background, and I think I would probably leave it here because we will enter in the debate very quickly.
Thank you. Dina.
Well, first of all, let me say that from a personal point of view, it's really amazing to be seated with this panel, so thank you very much, Montse and Paul. From a professional point of view, as coordinator of the observatory, obviously, thanks to Walter and Elena to agree to talk about this issue. Just a quick note about the observatory. We have been working now 3 years. We continue to truly believe in what we are doing, so we hope we will be able to continue to do so in the next following months and years. Now, I have three things to say about the challenges that Catalonia faces from an international point of view, which is my main area of interest. The first one is about anticipation. I think there is a problem with the debate that is going on, and that is that either we focus on the very short term, either we focus on the scenarios about an hypothetical independent Catalonia option that could take many years. And the last 2 months, I think, in my opinion, have shown that if one thing matters more than the final status that the region can reach, is the different obstacles and steps that lie ahead in the process. Let's take, for example, the argument of an independent Catalonia remaining in the European Union. One initial consideration here refers, I think, to the nature of European politics. It's a matter of knowing how EU works. And right now the EU is a diplomatic entity. That does not organize itself in the basis of which choices are more rational or more sensible. I mean, if we try to be rational or sensible, I think it's quite obvious that Catalonia benefits from being in the European Union and that the European Union benefits also from having Catalonia within. But the truth is that the criteria dominating European politics now are very different. You need to be strong diplomatically speaking, you need to study carefully the legislation to find a way to interpret it in a beneficial way for you. And in a sort of way, it's a club of gentlemen. And the basic rule in a club of gentlemen is to abide to the rules of the House. Maybe one day Europe will be a democracy in a way that where the majority counts more than the power of each state individually. But that's not the case nowadays. We don't count votes in Europe. We count power and we count states. So in that sense, I think that Catalonia, in this particular argument regarding the remaining as an hypothetical independent state in the European Union, what really needs is to design and anticipate a path, let's say a roadmap for Europe if they want to take seriously the argument of a possible independence. I will be tempted to say that there's no strictly utility in saying that we want to be independent within the European Union. What really matters is to influence the process. The process is more important than what we want at the outcome. And in the history of European integration, everything, if you study the story of the history of European integration, everything has been subject to the circumstances and the agreements that were available in a particular time and in a particular point of the debate. And Catalonia will not be a difference in that sense. It is more important to be on the table than to cry out loud that we want to remain in Europe. That's the first point, anticipation. It's not about the outcome, it's about the process. Now, the second one, which leads me to the second point, which is about uncertainty. And allow me here to use the case of Scotland. Obviously, here the strategy in of the UK is very different from the Spanish government. Here, it's curious how by recognizing the national identity of Scotland and by accepting the legitimacy of a referendum, the unionists have completely deactivated all the emotional or identity issues of the debate. So identity is not the focus, let's say, in about the debate. It's about how Scotland will be if it will be independent. And I think that, in my opinion, this strategy is paying off the unionists. They are winning, let's say, the way of in which the debate is creating. And now let's take the example of the Scottish government. We see that they are losing ground rapidly even because people want to have a definitive answer about a lot of things. They are not discussing about independence itself. They are discussing about questions about fiscality, about the head of state, about the currency, about the armed force, about the nuclear deterrence. That's quite a lot of things, let's say. And the problem is that those things are more appropriate to be discussed in an election, not in a referendum. So the Scottish government, if they want to have any chance to win the forthcoming referendum, they have to acknowledge that they are not able to provide all the answers. First, we ask for independence. Then we solve our uncertainties. And I think that's exactly what can happen also in the Catalan debate. If the pro-independence camp tries to go too deep, they will find that there are different ways, even incompatible ways, of how an independent Catalonia should work. And I think the results on Sunday show a little bit already this problem that is going on. In that sense, I think that for the sake of the debate, Catalonia should acknowledge that the road to independence is a road to uncertainty. And it doesn't have to be a bad thing. I think it's just it's one thing that we need to be careful, because one thing is talking about independence, the other is about how we run a country. So the first thing, anticipation. The second one is acknowledging the uncertainty. And the third point is very obvious. Is if Catalonia at the international level thinks small and local, they will end isolated, even if they start the process to independence. And if they think big and European, they will have recognition. And what Catalonia needs to do at the international level right now, even if we defend independence or not, is to increase its visibility, its own stature, and to show to the world that Catalonia in its own can add value, even if you are pro-independent or against independence. Let me take two specific examples. In 2014, for the first time probably, European parties will present a unique candidate for being president of the European Commission. And it's curious how anybody thought about that a person that has real chances to be able to run for this post is a Catalan, which is Josep Borrell. So in what sense it shows this idea of thinking big, of being ambitious, but not just being ambitious to be independent, to be ambitious at the international level. And I think that putting, for example, his name on the list could do more for the new aspirations of Catalans than 80% of the things that we are doing now. A second example is about the union of the Secretary of the Union for the Mediterranean, which is in Barcelona, which is a major project. It could be like a bridge between the Mediterranean and Europe. And again, this is not really a priority for the Catalan government. How is it possible that a big thing for Europe like this one, it stays a little bit like on the sides? So in some way, Catalans need to say to the world, see, I can do things by my own. I can add value, and that's the adding value, I think that's the important point. And I might be small. I'm not sure about if I want to go alone or not. But that's the only way to increase recognition. And I think that to gain power regarding our relation with Spain, which is more or less about the background, is the first step in this new scenario. So for that, we need to participate in international fora. We need to add value on its own. So to summarize, anticipation, acknowledging the uncertainty, and adding value in the international fora, I think that's two things that Catalonia or Catalan society should be doing right now, either if the option is to work for independence or for any other new political status.
Thank you.
So, my name is Walter Oppenheimer, which is not a very Spanish name. It's a German name. My father was German. My mother was Spanish, Catalan. I was born in Barcelona and raised in Barcelona. What I want to say with that is that I'm not a patriot. I'm not against Spain. I'm not against Catalonia independent. I just want to be happy here or there or in any other place. And I think the mainstream of Catalans are not born from Germans and Catalans, but they think very much like me. They don't care about if Catalonia is independent or not. But if they've been forced to choose, they probably will choose Catalonia rather than Spain. What I mean with that is that the Spanish are always very angry. When I say Spanish, I mean the rest of Spain. Very angry because they believe the Catalans are always asking for something. They are never enough. They want more and more money and more rights and more recognition, national recognition. Okay, I agree with them. The problem is the Catalans. But what the Spanish don't see at all is that the solution is in the hands of Spain. If rather than tell to the Catalans that they don't have the historic right to be independent because they have never been a proper state, or talk about legal arguments or the European Union or whatever, if just they try to tell the Catalans, well, I think we are better together, you need us and we need you, so we can be much better. I think it's what the English have been doing. The English say, okay, don't care, if you want to go, go, but I think you are better in the Union rather than as a as an independent state. All that has been very clear during the crisis of the Estatut in 2005-2006. I think the reaction in Madrid, because it's Madrid rather than Spain, has been horrible, and is what has made the fight to the sovereignism we see now, of course, with the problems of the crisis, the financial problems, and all that. But what is the problem to call Catalonia a nation? Not a problem for anyone. What is the problem to really study what are the financial problems of Catalonia? Rather than do that, the Spanish started an incredible campaign who was very, very, very bad received in Catalonia. And now we see the results of all that. Now the election. In the election, in my opinion, what we have seen is a disastrous result for Mr. Mas, rather than for Convergencia. For the president or the next president is really horrible. He has lost all his political authority. But the result doesn't show that the sovereignism is finished. On the contrary, sovereignism is exactly like it was in before the election, with one difference, that we can see the extremes of sovereignism much bigger than they were before, like the extremes of the pro-unionist parties or citizens in Catalonia are stronger or more with a bigger quantity than they were before. But still there is a big mainstream who doesn't care about being independent or not, just they want a better financial agreement, maybe better national recognition, etc., etc. What I mean with that is I see the election as a very good opportunity for Mr. Rajoy, if he can maneuver properly, because Mr. Mas will be weak, but the sovereignism is still very strong, and is a perfect opportunity to try to have an agreement with Mr. Mas and maybe go for the federal Spain that somebody believes is a solution. Very sure.
Thank you. Okay, so Anna Bosch has still not arrived, as you may be able to deduce from the empty chair. So, Montserrat, you're due on next anyway, and you wanted to make some comments. I think something that we haven't actually gone into... Dear me.
This is the censorship towards the city view.
You have to remember, I am the classic absent-minded professor. I'm in the last stages of Alzheimer's, and I know you're a very forgiving young woman. So
no problem. Maybe this is some you
sorry,
know.
Sorry, I do forgive me.
No problem.
Elena Moya, sorry.
Very quickly, but maybe this is, I'm not sure, you know, this is, I'm going to offer the city view. I don't know, you know, how welcome, maybe you don't want to hear it. But
that's exactly what I was going to say we were lacking.
Exactly. Well, there you, so thanks very much to everybody for having me here. It's a pleasure. I'm a regular in this place, and I really support, and you know, thank you for all the work that you do here. And I guess from the financial, I've come been asked to bring the financial perspective, and which I think that in this heated political emotional debate is, you know, has been unfortunately lacking a little bit. And not as in this debate today, but in the debate about, you know, independence. But from the city point of view, like, you know, opening the FT and seeing things like this is quite astonishing. If somebody had told me 14 years ago, when I landed in London as a financial journalist, that I would see independent this black, you know, on the front page of the, you know, the, no, well, not the front page this day, but, you know, Catalan independence, Q&A, the FT, I really would have fallen off my chair. which shows that this is an issue, that it's at the very heart, it's at the very heart of Spain, but also this is at the very heart of Europe. Because anything going wrong, you know, anything, any disorderly breakout of Spain would really pose, you know, a threat to the European Union, that the EU now just being on the edge as it is of many things, it cannot really afford. So this is a very serious matter. That is a very delicate situation in a country that's tilting, is on the edge of a bailout, which could send the whole European Union project, you know, into an implode project and being the end of it. So this is, I think, what we're discussing really, is very, very serious matter. I think countries have broken up for money reasons all the time. You know, I'm sure people in the British people here will remember a big nation that threw sea on the of the coast in New York because they didn't want to pay taxes, and in the end they got away with independence. We've seen empires being broken down because of tax reasons. We've seen the Ottoman Empire fell, the Spanish Empire fell, British colonies. Yugoslavia most recently, why did Yugoslavia break up in the end? It broke up because the rich parts of Yugoslavia got fed up with subsidizing the poorest parts, and that was the end of it. So we've seen that, the Catalan case against taxes, it was a revolt against taxes, it was 1714, I'm sure you all know the history very well. So after 1714, you know, that was the first Spanish Civil War, another Civil War, you know, a 40-year-old, you know, lengthy, damaging dictatorship, but we're back to square one, we were where we were. This issue is still on the table. Catalans still feel that being long into Spain is financially detrimental. To put an example of, you know, why the Catalans may feel that. When I was a journalist at Bloomberg covering, you know, utilities in throughout Europe, there was this attempt of Gas Natural, which is a Barcelona-based natural gas company, attempt to buy Iberdrola, by then the second largest utility in Spain. The goal was to create, instead of having an atomized power sector, start creating what everybody else in the world was doing, big, powerful energy companies. And they launched a takeover. They had the money, the takeover was absolutely fine. And that takeover had furious reaction from by the then Aznar-led government in Madrid. And I was one day in the office and I received a call from a member of the government tipping me of a future increase in natural gas taxes that would undermine Gas Natural, it would undermine its profits, therefore wishing that that story went out, putting the price of Gas Natural down. It was a debt and stock takeover, so really, you know, trying to make that takeover difficult. That really surprised me because A, obviously, this is not something the government should be doing. And B, it just shows some hatred that you think, where is this coming from? Well, obviously, there's four centuries behind. But this is an example of why a company based in a region that owned 25% of Repsol, Spain's number one oil company, but yet had, you know, only two seats in the board, so no power. Why did that government decide that it was better to sell in the end Endesa to the Italians and not let Gas Natural be at the front of that Spanish energy company? How did that happen? In the end, we all know what's happening with the Spanish energy sector. It's atomized again, you know, Endesa was broken apart, the Italians benefited from it. And then Gas Natural in the end had to end up buying Unión Fenosa, which was the one that they didn't, that nobody liked. It was the worst of the three. So there is a problem. There is a problem. In the end, Gas Natural had to do through La Caixa a coup and get, you know, somebody in Repsol, and now the La Caixa consortium sort of type people control Repsol. So there is a problem. There's a lot of tension. So let's look at Catalonia in detail. You know, so what's the can this be accomplished? Is Catalonia capable of being independent? So it's 16% of the population, is number two after Andalusia, and 200 billion euros in GDP, and that's 18% of GDP. 15 years ago, and this has worsened, 15 years ago it was 10% of population, 15% of GDP, no, 15% of population, 20% of GDP, and 25% of exports. So Catalonia has
lost in the past decade, in the past 10, 15 years. It's number four in terms of GDP per capita. The Basques are richer, the Navarrese are richer, and Madrid is richer as well in terms of GDP per capita. What's gone wrong? Catalonia in the past decade has absorbed 1.5 million immigrants without generating more revenues, without being more productive. So therefore, capacity is at fault. 92 Olympics have created what I call an easy jet economy. They've created a flood of tourism, but they've created low-paid jobs. They haven't created multinationals. They haven't created capital, which you may or may not be in for capitalism, but actually it is the capital-rich countries that enjoy the highest degrees of freedom and actually and opportunities, this country being an example of them. Then companies have sold out. The good old bastions of Catalan industrialism, Chupa Chups and Panrico, they sold out. The third generation prefers to play golf. They've sold to private equity. You know, we have some good companies. We have AgroLiman, we have CaixaBank, Sabadell, but not enough. You know, we're not a financially rich country. We're weak. And then, like everybody else in Spain, we overspend. So we are financially bust, and that's a fact. So the situation, combined with the economic crisis, has translated into an increase in people being fed up and wanting independence, saying, you know, we are worse off. We're giving 8% of our GDP every year net to Madrid. This is twice as much as what the richest European regions give to the poorest within the same country that we know of. Maybe some countries that they don't say so or they don't publish those figures are more generous. But that we know of, this is twice as much. So why us? Then, is this possible? Could this be accomplished? I think economists agree that yes. I mean, obviously, if 8% of GDP goes and doesn't go back, the numbers look good. Obviously, people say there's a lot of debt. Of course, there's a lot of debt, and there's been a lot of overspending. But if you add the numbers, the country wouldn't look too bad. The country would look much better than many other European countries. Obviously, not to name, you know, Portugal and Ireland. But Spain, if you put Catalonia's GDP in terms of world GDP, it would be around the 40th largest country in the world. It would be bigger than the Chile, the Czech Republic, Nigeria, Romania, Morocco, Croatia. These are countries that are more populous. And if you do the numbers, you would get still a 4% budget surplus and a 78% debt to GDP ratio, which is much better than Spain and much better than any other European countries. So it's fiscally possible. The flip side, many people say, oh, yeah, the numbers are up, but then Spanish people, you know, the largest trading market, which it is, would stop buying Catalan products. It is a mystery to me why would that happen. I think as consumers, we all want, you know, the best options, the cheapest, in terms of cheap, the price and quality. It's a mystery to me who would do that, but that's one of the arguments. And I think one of the main points in the flip side and that explains the failure of this election is the uncertainty. And I think, Didac, I'm afraid I'll have to disagree a little bit. You say we have to accept that this is a road to uncertainty. I think that the uncertainty around the outcome of whether Catalonia would belong to the European Union or not is financial, from a financial point of view, is unacceptable. I mean, this, for that project to be sound from a financial point of view, you need to know whether we would be part of the EU or not. It's just too big of a loose end to leave it like that. And then for people who say financial isolation, Catalonia would be out of financial markets, I don't think that's true. I think financial markets have demonstrated over and over again that they're willing to finance dictators, you know, the worst corrupt governments. They'll finance Russia, Iraq, they'll finance Mozambique, they'll finance Libya, they'll finance whoever who pays enough yield, you know, for the sovereign bonds. So I don't think Catalonia would be more isolated than anybody else, you know. Catalonia, and people forget, the financial markets love stories. They look for investors, look for value, or they look for growth. So they look for, you know, something that's going to explode and grow a lot, or they look for something cheap. And if you can offer one of the two, you'll find an investor base. And Catalonia has a good story behind it. Yes, markets are oversimplistic. They don't have any memory. Whatever happened in the past, don't care. What's the story today? You're selling me what? Is it worse? Is it cheap? Is it pays? So I'll do it. I'll put money. So in terms of financial isolation, I don't think that's a problem. So what to do? You have this financially viable project, but then you have some too much uncertainty biggest of all the European Union. What to do? I don't know what to do, and even less so, I don't know when. Is this the right time? You know, hundreds of thousands of people are unemployed. For respect to them, shouldn't we all be concentrating on that rather than this? People say, well, it's a political occasion. Okay, the political occasion, you know, your Madrid people are attacking so much, actually making it quite easy, you know, to provoke this. The opposition at home is quite weak, so yes. And then people say, well, it all depends on Madrid, it all depends on Brussels, it all depends on the financial community. But I don't agree with that. I think the ball is in Catalonia's court. I think ultimately countries decide their own future, like people. And I think that in Catalonia's case, I think if you look at it from a financial point of view, there's four key elements lacking, which is union of purpose. We see it's fragmented. There's not one voice here, it's fragmented. Financial strength, you know, probably need to get the house together before embarking on something like that. Wealth of consequences, being the European Union membership, you know, the biggest of all. And then future, what does the future look like? And again, I'm sure when you say, well, it's not about the detail, well, I think it's about the detail. Do we want a second run in the Barcelona airport, and who's going to pay for it? What's the infrastructure going to look like? Is our education system going to better? Yes or no, and why and how, and who's going to pay for it? What are the tax incentives? What are we going to do with the foreign companies? What are we going to do with taxes? What are we going to do with monetary policy? So all this, I guess, is missing. And for all these uncertainties, I only know one certainty, which is that from a City of London point of view, this has to be resolved, because this creates a lot of uncertainty, and now we have 4 years of uncertainty ahead. And the one thing, markets can forgive, you know, many things, and do forgive many things and buy many things, but what they do not tolerate or forgive is uncertainty. That's the number one enemy. And this plus 4 years more is going to hurt Catalonia, it's going to hurt Spain, and it's going to weigh in Europe as well. And on top of that, there's people suffering from unemployment. And on top of that, let's not remember that it seems to me that are there only two solutions here? Is it independence or is it PP? And if I, you know, can have the first question, I would like to address it to Paul. The fact that there are two positions here, that seems to be only two positions, and as Walter was saying, this rise in extremism in both, does this not look to you too much a la 1936? Obviously not without a conflict, but with the same pattern of the inability to come together into an agreement being something that in the end turns self-destructive and detrimental for all, taking really the focus on what's important at the moment, which is the fact that, you know, half of the country cannot make it to the end of the month.
Well, first of all, thank you for this amazing intervention. I know Monse wants to come in and say more, but just to answer your question, from my position of extreme ignorance, it seems to me that the decision by Mas to take this extraordinary step of risking a wonderful majority, to me, and as I said earlier, I do the past, not the future, and I have quite a lot of problems with the present. It seems to me that that decision makes sense only as seeking a better negotiation position vis-a-vis Madrid. Not to move towards independence, but to be able to negotiate towards federalism, to me, the whole Estado de las Autonomías in Spain is the most toxic legacy of the transition. We could maybe talk about that. And it seems to me that what Mas was not behaving, it seems to me, I mean, he took a hell of a risk. In some respects, and we can talk about this, I don't know, of course he's lost power. His position is much weaker at one level, but he now has another blackmail card, which is the greater strength of Esquerra Republicana de Catalunya. So, in my view, I don't think that it's two possibilities, increased centralism or independence. There's got to be a middle way, which, you know, if it was down to me, would be asymmetric federalism, you know, because clearly there are colossal differences between regions in Spain. There are regions that it is ludicrous that are autonomous to start with. That's what I meant by the toxic legacy. So anyway, Montse.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Well, now I'm going to focus on the point of this specific meeting that we are having today. The consequences of the election. And I think the first thing that has to be said to set up what the main elements are is the following. The percentage of people who have voted in favour of sovereignty represent 57.73%. The percentage of people that have voted against sovereignty add up to 35%. So it means there is a majority in favour of sovereignty, but there is a very important number of people, a very important percentage of people, 35%, who are against. And, of course, in a democracy, it's necessary to try to offer a solution, a way through for the different positions that coexist within a single country. So, having seen this outcome, in my view, the first thing that has to come into play is the need for responsibility on behalf of political parties and politicians, the need of furthering democracy and being able to engage in a dialogue, and a dialogue that should not be closed and should not be prejudiced. A dialogue to find a solution that will cover social issues, but also identity issues or national aspiration issues, because the two of them are very strong in the current landscape. It is obvious that Artur Mas has received a lower than expected number of votes. He has, his party, Convergencia Unión, has won 71 seats out of 135. They have lost 12 votes. That's a lot. But still, Convergencia is the party that has the majority with 1.112341 million votes, which amounts to 30.68% of the total of votes casted in this election. The Catalan Republican Left is the big winner. In my view, what we see is that, okay, Convergencia loses 12, the Catalan Republican Left wins 11. I think that part of that dance, if we could say it, of votes has to do with some voters, typical voters of Convergencia. Obviously there are going to be others, but I think that there are some typical voters of Convergencia that thought the Esquerra Republicana will do it better. They are more committed to independence. They will lead the process with greater strength. It's one possibility, at least. There is another, but I think that there are some factors that explain the surprise, I would say surprise, at least surprise of most people who usually read newspapers. And they read many newspapers and read the forecast for the outcome of the election. They even read The Guardian on that Friday, so at least they were warned that what all the main newspapers were predicting had been challenged in The Guardian. But nobody suspected, or very few people suspected, that The Guardian was going to be closer to what actually happened. because I remember on the very same day of the election, looking at La Vanguardia in the internet and looking at the predictions and thinking, well, fine. And they didn't remove that the day after when it all had proved dramatically wrong. So that was a big surprise. I thought three reasons to explain, to try to explain this. The first one is the participation increased almost 10%. The second reason, the Spanish government presented a very effective campaign against the sovereignty position. The ministers and even the prime minister came to Catalonia, and this is something that really played a major role, I think, in the whole process. And the third factor, I think, is the actions of some sectors of the media, in particular the Madrid media, if I can say it that way. Well, the Madrid media, in the sense that they kind of were able to generate some doubt, hesitation about people, accounts, countries where there are secret accounts, all that kind of not proved, but not unproved. And that was the seed of doubt and hesitation. Regardless of what's the outcome, if I throw water on the table, I cannot put it back. And this is what has happened. And I think that has played an important role. I'm not judging, I'm just saying some of the things that should be taken into account. This election is important. It's important because I think that almost for the first time in the Catalan history, it breaks a pattern. The pattern was, traditionally in Catalonia, regional election, the nationalists win, there is great abstention of a sector of the population. General election, the Socialist Worker Parties win, and there is a greater number of people voting for that particular option. There was, there has been up to now, a sect of Catalan society that would not be interested, mobilized when there was a regional election. And this has changed, and this is different. Now, consequences of the election. For me, the most serious consequence of the election is the difficulty in the governability of Catalonia. CiU needs support. Convergencia and Union cannot rule by itself and needs support from other political parties. But obviously, nowadays in Catalonia, it's a lot easier to be in the opposition. Because while you are in the opposition, your hands are clean. They are clean. You are not touching. You are not having to do the cuts. You are not having to dirty yourself thinking about the people who you are actually with the cuts, with these terrible economic limitations, the people that you are depriving of the most basic things. And this is a big, big difficulty. Whoever enters the government knows that they are going to have to administer the cuts that the European Union will impose on the Spanish government and the Spanish government will impose on the autonomous communities. And this is not nice. Of course they don't want to enter into a coalition government. What's to win? Of course they want to just support sometimes when the topic, the matter is very important. Yes, because they could only say, okay, yes, we only this thing which is fair and everybody likes, we support, or almost everybody likes, we support. But difficult things, well, economic things, that's a different matter. And I think that this is a big problem. Because I think that at the point when Spain finally requests the bailout from the European Union, a new package of austerity measures will come and will have to be applied. And this really is an incredible burden for whoever is in government. Well, as a result, there is a danger, as I see it now, that Catalonia becomes ungovernable. And in that scenario, I can see two possibilities. The first one is a new election. The second one is the suspension of Catalan autonomy. And I say that because new election, the Catalans want to spend still more money in another election. They had one before it was time for one. Now they want to have another one. All right, Catalans, have a break. We take over. It's a possibility. And I think that in the current circumstances, the only way out, in my modest view, uninformed view, is the creation of a unity government. By this I mean a government in which members of all political parties are engaged. A government that should be aware of the very dire situation they are going through. A government that should be concerned with the social issues, with the economic issues, and a government that will have, up to a point, because representing the citizens, we've got almost 58% for sovereignty and 35% against, a government that also is able to move forward in their demands for sovereignty. And then, if a referendum takes place, which opens a completely different avenue about whether that might be possible and in what circumstances, then that would be another issue. But in my view, and in the light of the current results, a referendum would be a big gamble. A gamble from which, if it fails, Catalonia will suffer and it will take years to recover. I'm thinking about the experience of Quebec when they had a referendum and they failed. And that really was a very important blow to the pro-sovereignty campaign. So having said all these things, I just would like to finish briefly by saying that when we look at Catalonia and the prospects that Elena has been mentioning, I think that we have to understand that what's happening in Catalonia is not isolated in its demands. Within the European Union, we see at the moment how different small nations like Scotland, like Flanders, like Catalonia, are thinking or are expressing some aspirations to greater political autonomy within the European Union, which is common to these three cases that I have mentioned. And this happens at a time when the very same concept of sovereignty is being transformed. Because when Spain received the bailout from the European Union, Spanish sovereignty will be diminished, seriously diminished. So, of course, Catalonia lives in the same environment. So a transformation of democracy could lead the way for the construction of the European Union on an alternative basis. The United States of America exists, and there are states that are very small, but they work well together. It's not impossible to consider that the European Union, which has moved a long way, could also be able to integrate the smaller units within itself that would make it more efficient economically and more manageable, always within a framework of democratic practice. And just to finish, I would say that, of course, federalism is a word that we heard a lot of, but I would like to see who the federalists are, because they usually only come out in these specific electoral campaigns. The very same President Maragall in Catalonia was federalist. He believed in federalism. He thought he had convinced Mr. Zapatero. There was the idea of the España plural, a plural Spain. Unfortunately, didn't go through. So, if there is an option, it has to be a consistent option for when they win and for when they lose, not only to be called when there is an election and it's necessary to break down the unity of the vote. Thank you.
Well, thank you, all four of you. We still don't have Anna Bosch. It seems to me, as no doubt you can see from my incompetent chairing of the whole thing, there's been very little collusion or collaboration.
I want to collide with her.
You want to lie with her?
Collide.
Oh, collide. Sorry, I was going to say you need to...
I mean, I disagree a little bit with...
Right. Well, I'm sure you're going to have every opportunity in a minute. But if you go ahead, you want to. No, let me just say, I actually think, to my surprise, because there has been relatively little collusion between us, that we've actually heard an amazing array of negative arguments, where I have to say I thought we would hear more positive pleas. But anyway, that's terribly interesting. The one thing we haven't really heard, although maybe everybody in the room already knows, are about the issues to do with the very specific issues about possible obstacles, probable obstacles that would be put in the way of any further move towards independence, both by Madrid, but also by Brussels. But maybe... I'm sure you do, Monica, you always do. Right, good, I'll take note. Do you know, I can't do this if everybody keeps interrupting. Right, I'm opening it first to the panel. Walter, you wish to take issue with Montserrat?
No, just a couple of points, in particular the one of the options are new elections or the suspension of the autonomy. I don't think so. I can't see new elections at all after these elections. And I'm pretty sure Mas will be president with the votes of Esquerra. I think it's already announced. The other thing is how he can govern all that.
But
he has many options. He can move this side for one thing, the other side for the other thing. No, I can't see elections at all. And certainly I can't see the Catalan autonomy suspended much because... Well, then we will have independence very soon. The other point I want to make is actually the Catalans independentists. I think they don't know really. They haven't decided. They don't call it independence. They call it sovereignty. They're sovereignists. What does it mean to be sovereignist? And in especially why they call it sovereignism rather than independentism? I think it's because they don't know if they are independentists or not. Only the Esquerra Republicana voters are proper independentists. Inside CiU there are many, many views. Of course there are many independentists as well, but more in Convergencia rather than in Unió. I can't see Unió as an independentist party. And the coalition will break if they have a proper independentist position. And very important to take into account, Mas has never promised a referendum, a unilateral referendum. He has always said a referendum, a consult or consultation within the law. Mm-hmm. So within the law, it means we are not going to the third, the civil war again. I don't think so, not yet. No. And the only problem is within the law could mean within Spanish law or within a new Catalan law approved by the Catalan parliament. But in this case, probably a law who allow the Catalans to have a referendum will be brought to the Constitutional Court by Madrid.
Right, Monica, you're itching to say something.
No, you just happened to mention the EU. Anyway, thank you. No, just thought I could add 2 points about the EU, not without being a particular specialist, but still. I would have thought that, first, even the sort of moral point of view, the idea that richer regions of the EU might want to leave because they're rich, leave behind, because there are, of course, rich regions and poor ones in every country, is completely, I would say, it's completely anathema to EU politicians. It's also sort of principled, from a principle point of view, unacceptable, because, firstly, rich regions always sort of subsidise through general taxation other ways, poorer regions, so it's normal. Secondly, I mean, the whole principle of progressive income tax is exactly that, that everybody who's richer has to pay relatively more to those who are not into the common pot. Thirdly, the whole of the regional policy in the EU is built on the fact all the structural funds are based on an exact calculation of the richness of every region and on the redistributive principle. And the payments into them are based on that redistributive principle. And that's why Ireland, from that particular cohesion fund, and Spain benefited so much and developed so much in the 80s. So that it's, in that sense, it's a real problem, theoretical problem and a moral problem. But in practice, also, from the bureaucratic point of view, I can't see that any piece of a previous EU state can go through, can do anything but go through a proper accession process. Because it's the same as, like, a professor can't enroll a student and has to send it to the application department, you know, the admissions department, and they have to fill in the forms and go through the admissions process. But it's the same thing, politicians can't admit. And in the accession thing, I'm not saying that it would be impossible, but you have to go through the accession process, which can take long. And that would only be once everybody else in the whole world or whoever has recognized you as an independent state. So I think it's very difficult.
Thank you. I'm going to let, rather than have members of the panel respond individually to these things, I'm going to take a few contributions and then perhaps we'll come back. Young man there.
Yeah, I think there's something that's been a bit missing from the debate, although Montserrat kind of introduced it through the back door, which is the impact of the cuts on the Catalan elections. Because I don't think there was just a shift in favour of more pro-independence positions in the elections, which clearly there was. I think also there was a shift leftwards. I mean, all of the left parties increased their votes substantially, particularly Esquerra, but also Iniciativa, and La Cup entered Parliament with a very radical left message, with three MPs. I don't think we can say that it's just automatic that any government in any region of Spain or any historic nation has to apply the cuts. You can't argue that they have to do that, but yet they can stand up to Europe over sovereignty for Catalonia. I mean, it's, you can't argue both things. And actually, the Convergencia government has been even more aggressive in applying the cuts than even the PP government, to be honest. And I think they paid the price for that. I think that was the main reason why they did so badly. And the other thing I wanted to say is I don't think that Catalans that are fighting for independence are all fighting for the same reasons. We've talked a lot about the issue of the fiscal deficit, but I actually went to a La Cup election rally on Sunday, and nobody out of all the 10 candidates that spoke even mentioned that. It was all about whether Madrid was intolerant to Catalans, it was about the different social issues, evictions, and it was about bringing together kind of the Catalan territories and giving it a kind of political entity. And I think that there are different groups pushing for different understandings of what Catalonia is about, and we can't just limit it to looking at things in terms of whether Catalonia is fiscally discriminated or not.
Thank you. Man in the red shirt.
Professor Sanchez, I really agree with what Luca said, and I think if Convergencia considers so highly governability, I think they can acknowledge the result of the elections and put into practice the pactism and the pace of in the cover of a Convergencia Union with the Catalan partners. Because if there are so many voters going from Convergencia Unión to Esquerra Republicana, and if they campaign for independence or for sovereignty, and there are other parties as well campaigning for that, they can put that into practice as well. And I'm agreeing that the cuts are important. They lose votes because they put they cut back so much in health, in education. And people are jumping from the balconies because they are evicted. So people, it's an emergency situation. So if Convergencia Unión cares so much about independence, they should put into practice that. And I think welfare is important, and is related with independence as well, because independence has been an issue for a long time, but now it has become very popular because of the welfare issues in Catalonia and in other Catalan countries. So I think they need to put into practice that practice and to be a little bit brave, because they are losing votes for the independentists and for the left.
Okay, thank you. Jeffrey?
Yeah, thanks very much. I got off the plane from Barcelona only about 3 hours ago. I just spent 72 hours talking with a lot of my friends there. I used to be the British Consul General in Barcelona up until 2005. And Catalonia's got under my skin, so I do like to find out what on earth is going on there. But the one thing that I found is that a lot of people were very surprised at the result. Very surprised that Mas, in their view, lost. I mean, some people are calling not up to a Mas, but up to a Menos. And some of my British colleagues are saying it's up to a mess, because the whole thing, as far as they're concerned, is a mess for Catalonia. Why did he risk his majority to do this just 2 months after this independence rally? I was there too on the 9/11, and it was incredibly impressive and very, very powerful. But I think perhaps we got sort of swept away with it in one way or another. Why did he lose? Now, one of the issues was the cuts, but unfortunately, this is the reality of the world. You can't make money. You either tax it more, or you cut down, or you go and print it. There's no other way of sort of producing it, and that doesn't seem to have got through to a lot of people. I'm sorry, I'm feeling rather radically there. There were others who were concerned, I think, talking enough about the format of Convergencia and who's actually running it. And some people put forward things which you may not like, and that is that there's a degree of suspect about the way that Convergencia and the governments in the past have been run, and particularly about certain members of the Pujol family. And the idea that somehow Oriol Pujol in particular, who's had to face some legal issues, is very much up there in front, behind Mas, and is Mas his own man. There's a furious argument over this. Others said, no, he is his own man, and this has been shown by his speeches. Because others were saying he'd been let down by Duran Lleida, who, I believe, had on the Union side, and that's another thing, Convergencia Union, does it really converge? Not really. Is it really a union? No, it's a, because it's run by two wings, and one is the very Christian Democrat wing, which is Union. And Duran Lleida is supposed to have said, I've not read it, that actually Catalonia has got to apply to the EU. It's not a foregone conclusion. And that, again, upset things and moved things perhaps away from them. Esquerra is definitely the winner, without any doubt, because they've sort of had those increases, those 11 seats. But then so is this weird party called Ciudadanos, which suddenly appeared from 3 to 10, which is only one short of what Esquerra had last week. So I don't know what he's mentioned about, but I don't understand it at all. Where to next? This morning I had a meeting with some people from Esquerra, and this is a quote from today's Vanguardia. After a meeting between Junqueras and Mas, and Junqueras said, no estoy aquí por ser vicepresidente, sino por portar el país a la independencia. I'm not here to be vice president, I'm here to take the country to independence. Izquierda no es Pedro un debate institucionalis ni una teringuina de carex. We don't want to lose ourselves in debates, nor in the sort of the cobweb of really taking responsibility. Now, my Izquierda contact this morning told me, this is ridiculous. We voted for Esquerra to be involved in the government, and they've walked away from it. What is the matter with them? This was the one chance for them to be actually there. So what is the next step? Huge disappointment that Mas is talking about a vote in consultation in 4 years' time. Well, I personally will be past 70. I should be past 70. That's the biblical. I could be dead by then. And so a lot of
but you wouldn't have a vote anyway.
No, I know. But I have it under my skin, and I would like to know what the result is before I go into my wooden overcoat. But anyway, the whole thing is, now, do you wait another 4 years for this? Does this go on? All the uncertainty which you mentioned, financially, within the EU, etc.? Or do you actually now strike while the iron is hot? If Iskera is saying here, I came here to take this country to independence, then do you actually accelerate this process and really defy Madrid, because that is what it would be? Incidentally, it's a jolly good job that we in the UK don't have a constitution and we can get on with things like this in Scotland and not sort of being restricted by the lack of foresight of our politicians of the past.
Could you repeat the question so far?
There is no question at all. I'm merely contributing to that which I hope will be a benefit for some, and they may wish to sort of bounce off that. That's it. Thank you very much.
I mean, one of the things that you've just raised in mentioning the fact that convergencia y unión is at the very least two groups, the fact is Esquerra is in no sense a united group. You know, it's riddled with the most vicious internal squabbles, and in the early part of the 17th century Richelieu said he couldn't be doing with the Catalans because of their eternal disunion or disunity, la eterna desunión dels Catalans, as Richelieu said, who spoke fluent Catalan, of course, because as we all know, French is a dialect of Catalan. Anyway, young man at the back.
I wanted to make a very short question, is that if you look at the series of results of the Catalan elections in the last 20 years, you see an increasing disgregation of the parliament, with more and more parties every year, each one of them being smaller and smaller. And as has been said before, and I agree with that, this looks like a very big drawback to lead something as going to independence. So my question is essentially, do you think that this disgregation is going to decrease with time, or do we face a scenario where this is going to become bigger and bigger with the parliament, with basically no a parliament that which in which is impossible to have a majority, essentially.
Okay. First, I would like to respond to briefly to a point that Jeffrey made about the rise in the number of people voting for citizens. This is a very important phenomenon that has to be taken into account, because they have managed to attract a significant sector of Catalan society, people who are unionist and people who are receptive to the very efficient and excellent speaker who is Mr. Rivera. Without a different leader, I don't think they would get the same result. But they have this leader, and they have this result. Mr. Rivera is very efficient, convincing. He's able to provide sharp responses. And he is critical of the current situation. He is, and has always been, in opposition. And obviously, he can be critical of everything without engaging in any governmental responsibilities. But it's a party to look at because it's important, and now it's going to have its own parliamentary group within the Catalan Parliament. So that's important. Wait for years for a referendum? Well, I don't think I have to remind anybody here that as it stands, Catalonia cannot have a referendum within the current framework, because it's illegal. And Artur Mas promised to have a referendum that would be legal within the Spanish framework. So a referendum that would be acknowledged, whose result would be recognized. Then, going back to a question about saying, well, the Catalans, they say they are pro-sovereignty. Are they pro-sovereignty or are they pro-independence? What's the difference? Yes, it is different. Because if you want independence, you want your country to become a nation state, just like the other nation states in Europe. if you want sovereignty, if you are sovereign, it means that you can decide upon a range of options. And your options are full unity with Spain, federalism, symmetrical or asymmetrical. It's a status quo, autonomous community, or it's independence. Sovereignty means this, to give the people the right to decide upon a way, a range of different political options, and this is the difference. It has difficulties, but the idea behind this is the one that I'm putting forward to you. And then...
But sorry to interrupt. Yes. Does that not also require a referendum, which is illegal? In order for Catalan citizens to have the right to decide on those options, there would have to be a referendum. So in that sense, seen from Madrid, there's not much difference.
Yes, and we can see that some political parties are in favour of giving the Catalan people the right to decide. For example, the Socialist Party, the PSC, is in favour of giving, of having a referendum, even if they are going to vote no. You know, because if you give the people the right to decide, you are clarifying what the positions are. But obviously, now, it not even this referendum can take place because it's illegal. So I think that we need to understand that the Spanish constitutional framework is one, and this really governs the political options unless there is some change. And currently, even if many people, or at least these almost 58% of the population that won sovereignty, are in favor of a position of a eventual transformation of the Spanish constitution, having a majority of two centralist or unionist parties in the Spanish Congress, the PSOE and the PP, this makes impossible a change of the constitution, and this is makes impossible a change in the framework. Even the main objective of the pro-sovereignty movement, if they have one, should be to be united, which they are not, in order to have a common objective. While they become disunited, all that I said doesn't make sense because they are not going to get anywhere. And division is obviously, as has been mentioned by quite a few of the contributors, is obviously the main obstacle, as it has always been. I think that this is also associated, at least in my view, from an ethical point of view. Political parties should feel the responsibility to contribute to government and to serve the people that have elected them.
I wonder, sorry, I'd like to pick up what Monica said earlier about, because there is an issue here that I don't think is adequately explained anywhere, which is what, from Madrid's point of view, is denounced as el victimismo catalán, and which, from Barcelona's point of view, is denounced as, you know, la tiranía fiscal de Madrid. Now, the point that Monica made, if I'm right, is that in a well-organized democracy, tax revenue is taken by the central government and is then redistributed more or less equally. I mean, of course, in detail, there are going to be problems, but broadly, that is the ideal. I think broadly, that is the case in the United Kingdom. Mm-hmm. Broadly speaking, I mean, I know, and I'm a fairly avid reader of the newspapers, I do not see any region of Britain complaining that it pays more in tax than it gets back. And it is widely known that there are areas of the United Kingdom which receive considerable subsidy. Northern Ireland is a very obvious example. Scotland is another example. We occasionally hear complaints that these regions have, some regions have better hospitals or educational system, not having the fees issue that we all know about. But generally speaking, the way that, if you like, the fiscal arrangements in the United Kingdom are more or less universally accepted. Now, in Spain, clearly this is not the case. Now, there is a poisonous element, if you like, which is the unique situation of the Basque Country, which I clearly causes a problem, because obviously other regions would like to have the extremely privileged situation that the Basques have. But I have never had explained to me, and I wish, and you know, you're the guys to do it, I've never had explained to me adequately this simple question. Is Catalonia seriously hard done by, or is, as I think Monica was suggesting, that it, that actually the fact that there is an overall transfer of resources to poorer regions, what's happening and is presented as a victimisation of Catalonia. If that's the case, of course, it is seriously exacerbated by certain Madrid media. We think about the COPE, you know, we had a seminar here a couple of years ago which was about the huge discrepancies between the way Catalonia is treated in the Madrid media and how Spain is treated in the Barcelona media, in which the person who was doing this paper with an amazing panoply of visual and audio-visual aids played a tape from the COPE in which Federico Jiménez Los Santos actually said, "What is wrong with Zapatero? He only ever speaks to queers and Catalans. Does he not know any human beings?" And the audience, an audience very like this, laughed because they assumed this must be the spitting image programme. And seriously, people in the room, the British people in the room, could not believe that it was legal, that you know, it either had to be a comedy or the man who said this was going to go to jail for a hate crime. Now, so anyway, back to the fiscal issue.
Yeah, if I could quickly say the main difference between the United Kingdom and Spain and in many countries, because this is what many people in Denmark will say, oh, Copenhagen finances the rest of Denmark and Paris finances the rest of France. But there's a fundamental issue here. London is the capital. It's very clear. Qui paga mana. The one who pays is in power. London is home to the government, London is home to the city, London is home to the companies, then London governs, and then London rules, and then it subsidizes, you know, the little country rural area so we all can go and travel, and you know, at the end of the day, this is our little island. And that makes sense, because you exchange power for subsidies. The drama in Catalonia is that Catalonia, you know, less so now. We're Basque, you know, like in half of Spain, like the entire Spain. But until 10 years ago, and up to a point still now, they finance more, but there's no correspondence. There's no, we give a lot, we get very little back. And most importantly, how many, with the exception of our last ambassador, how many Catalan ambassadors are there out in the world? How many Catalan leaders of the Telefónicas, Endesas, all those monopolies? How many Catalan leaders are there? You can really count them with, you know, your two hands. It has had a historic, underrepresentative, you know, power in the people running the country. And that is a very, very big
but
point.
But it's a different issue. I mean, God knows, I'm finding myself here playing devil's advocate. But you know, all of those issues about how very few, you know, whereas if we take the comparison with Scotland, you know, we've had umpteen Scottish prime ministers, you know, leaders of the Labour Party, indeed leaders of the Conservative Party, you know,
the Royal Family called Stuart.
Sorry,
the Royal Family called Stuart.
And they don't even contribute, financially.
The point is that you're absolutely right about the lack of integration. But just on this, the fiscal thing, for a Danish citizen, and indeed you know many, or you know, for many British citizens reading about this, when what they hear is exactly what you just said, Catalonia contributes and gets nothing back. Well, let's apply that just, you know, let's apply that to the UK. London contributes a lot and gets nothing back from Scotland.
But London gets the power. But London contributes, but London runs the country.
So, in which case, your comparison, that's an absurd comparison. You're comparing Barcelona with London. You should be comparing Barcelona with Edinburgh.
No, exactly. Well, but the difference is that Edinburgh doesn't financially contribute, whereas Barcelona does. I'm comparing London to Madrid. Like, yes, London has the power. This is as if, for example, Edinburgh and Scotland was the number one economic region in the UK, whereas, you know, it had been the export powerhouse. It had contributed, you know, enormously, but yet no Scottish prime ministers, no Scottish people in power, no Scotland anywhere in running the country. But there's a trade-off. Yeah, London gives, but then London rules. And what I'm saying is that if you give, you should have a not equal, but you should be compensated in a way as to have some sort of proportion in power. This is the same we've seen in the European Union.
Then you wouldn't Germany be giving. Finances, if you wanted back, you wouldn't be giving. Sorry. Okay, everybody wants to join in on this, which is great. Walter, then Didac, then Peter, and I've lost count. That's three to be going on. The young lady next to him, right, you're going before him, because
Now, one of, going back to your first question, one of the differences between Spain and the UK is precisely the autonomies. So you, in the UK, you don't have one administration who has a budget for 8 million people, like in Catalonia, for the education, health, transport or whatever. So when you have big regions who need big budgets, you see if you lack of money or not. In the UK, it didn't happen because maybe a small entity knows they have no money, so they call the treasury and ask for money or whatever. But it's not the political point or the way to see economically that I'm being fiscally discriminated. Could be one explanation.
Okay, no, thank you.
I think there's a point where you can see that you have some sort of logic lacking in the fiscal system in Spain. Is that if you have one of the most rich regions, your objective from a central point of view is to use this, let's say, this wealth for the other, but to maintain also this region as one of the richer or developing of the country. So in that sense, let's say that you give 10 and you are in the first position of the most rich region. If after the redistribution you get 8, but there's 3 more that they have 9, there's no logic there. There's the principle of ordinality. It has been one of the main issues of the statute in 2009. So this, I think, is a very clear example of what you were asking, is where you can see that there's an injustice or that there's no logic in the fiscal system in Spain. I think that this one is just obvious. You cannot have you cannot prejudice from a logical point of view your richer region just because you want to distribute to the others. That
why not?
Well, I would say that from a respect, like if you respect politically your richer regions and you are asking them to make an effort and to contribute to solidarity, you cannot say to them, look, I'm going to take all what you have and not only I'm going to redistribute it to the other regions, but you are going to be prejudiced by the redistribution. So I think that there's this point of ordinality with was one of the main issues of discussion in 2009.
I'm shocked. This is an argument against progressive tax. Theoretically are equal. They all, in theory, pay taxes on a roughly similar basis, and then it's up to the government to decide how to... So, Manchester is actually, in this case, the analogy. It's another rich city. I mean, anyway, that's by the by. Young lady there.
I was going to say, there's a difference with the UK. I think UK, your fiscal transfers are not based on necessity of the regions at all. It's just like the Barnett formula, which is a bit randomly assigned by population and so on. But in Spain, actually, we are supposed to redistribute across regions based on a sort of index on necessity. And even within that index, you have some regions, when they recollect their taxes, and this applies to Catalonia, but also to Balearic Islands, Madrid and Valencia, we would say the index of covering the necessities that we all...
Sorry, the index of what?
Covering.
Index for covering the necessities, I don't know like the technical name. We have all the regions, and we have some regions. If covering all your necessities is 100, some of the regions are 110 and 120. So you would say, okay, then you're going to transfer that surplus to the regions that by collecting the taxes, they are 80, 90, 70, which would be Andalusia, Extremadura. We do that, and in our fantastic system, it happens that Extremadura, Andalusia, even within that agreed system in Madrid, they go up to 110, 112, and Catalonia, Balearic Islands, and Valencia, and Madrid sometimes, they go under 100% of covering the necessities that we all agreed in the central government that every region should be able to cover. So it is unfair, even within the system that is pacted in Madrid within all the regions and covering necessities, not within how much you contribute as a toll, but as a, your government is able to provide to your citizens the same services across Spain.
Okay, thank you, that's really helpful. Peter and then Monse wants to come back. And all check your watches, Sebastian wants to say something. Peter.
Well, in arguing for an independent Catalonia, part of the argument would be that Catalonia can only thrive then within the EU. And going back to what Monica was saying earlier, the morality of the EU, which I, as a great supporter of progressive taxation, South support, is that richer countries subsidise poorer countries. That's precisely the argument that's going on every time there's a summit meeting with the EU. So I don't understand how the Catalan newly independent government can say, we are now the fourth richest region in Spain, but we want to enter this new organisation because we have felt discriminated against and we had no intention of helping out Eastern Europe or whatever.
It's a problem of proportion. I was writing in my paper in Barcelona in the economy section for many, in the late 80s, and they were already talking about that. The problem is the Catalans never say they don't want to transfer money to the poor region. Never. They always say we want some limit. And the limit they always talk about is the limit who is in place in Germany between the lender.
4%.
It's 4% of the own GDP. Is what they say. They never say we don't want to pay to the poorer regions. Just they say we are paying too much. And they are getting better services than the Catalans.
Sebastian and then Angel.
I mean, a lot of things that have been said this evening have been extremely interesting. One area that hasn't been explored, and I think people in the round table might be able to clarify that, is what strategy was Artur Mas pursuing? Because if you look at Artur Mas's speeches, there was no mention of independence, or hardly at all. It depended on what audience he was speaking with. The idea of sovereignty is a very ambiguous term. I mean, it could be, and this has been argued, for example, in Giles Tremlett and in The Economist, something I felt I could identify with, that his strategy was to ride the wave of nationalism in order to achieve a strong bargaining position from which deepening the autonomy process in Catalonia might be possible to achieve that asymmetric federalism that Paul mentioned, indeed to achieve something similar to what the Basque country has. Because independence is not in the DNA of either Convergencia or even less Unión Democrática. If you think they are the heirs of the Liga Regionalista, which always sought to provide a model for Spain rather than to break away from Spain. I mean, I think the strategy has changed towards greater autonomy, but certainly not any form of independence. So it seems to me the prospects of any kind of deal with Esquerra are extremely limited. Esquerra is committed to the idea of independence. But beyond that, Esquerra is a party of the left. Convergencia Unión is a party of the right. It is committed to a neoliberal program of cuts. And it's very hard to imagine Esquerra being associated with that at all. So how that leaves the prospects for some deal, either a coalition or a support within Parliament, is very difficult to imagine.
Don't you think that there is a tradition in Spanish politics of the bogeyman? So, for instance, during the transition, when it was a tire a floja or a mano a mano between, I mean, in 1976, between Carrillo and Suárez, Carrillo could argue, as it were, symbolically, if there is not progress to democracy, I have the working class behind me, I will unleash them in a massive general strike, which, of course, he threatened, didn't work. Whereas during the same tire a floja, Suárez was saying, I've got to go slow, and if you try to push me to go any faster, I've got the army behind me. So I think there is a thing about the bogeyman, and I believe, I mean, I said earlier, I think that Mas was looking for a bigger majority to have a stronger hand in negotiating with Madrid. At one level he's weaker, but at another he's now got Esquerra as the bogeyman. Now, okay, we are running out of time. Angel Masado's got a question. There's a young man there got a question. That's three. I'm going to have those three questions and then Montse to sum up, okay?
So very briefly, back to the financial questions, one aspect that hasn't been mentioned, and I think it's extremely relevant, is that and that makes the Catalan case different from the UK or actually the federal states in the world, is transparency. Transparency about the rules of the game, transparency about the figures. The Catalan politicians for 30 years have been asking for official data on the actual contribution of Catalonia to the common system, and they only got them 4 years ago. Like, only this term, the Catalan government has been able to calculate the 8% of the GDP in order to demonstrate the fiscal effort of Catalonia. This is extremely relevant from a political point of view, because the feeling of being actually cheated is very strong for the political system.
I like to this is an academic setting, so obviously we're all very rational, but I think we're missing an aspect in here, which is the Rauscher element in the Catalan in every nation, especially in nationalism. And I think Mas is also a Catalan and very nationalistic. I think, personally, that's my reading of that. Mas saw the big demonstration, in a way, saw how the people passed him. You know, he realized, actually, he was in a setting of fiscal pact and all that, but then he saw this power demonstration. He always said, I'm willing to go all the length, as far as they can feel there is a backing, and he saw that backing. I mean, any Catalan, especially any Catalan politician, I mean, his innermost dream is to have his own country. Whether if he's called himself, because he's a pragmatic, always an autonomist, he always to have his own self-rule. And here, I think that's what happened. And you always think about Mas making rational calculations. And this, I think, that's what's been missing for so many analysts. I think Mas, he might be doing his calculations, but he's also got another element that he might actually want to pass into history as the man who brought independence to his own country. I mean, what else? I mean, would be worshipped more than Macià and Companys and all the rest. And with that, he would settle. I mean, he even said, actually, after that, I'm just quit. You know, I'm happy with, you know. So in order to prove that he's honest, actually, I see in the man, I don't know, maybe I'm a romantic and idealistic, but I see some of that in him. And I think he actually rose to the occasion, and he saw, okay, this is an ideal, and I want to go for it. And I think he's still in it. And I think because of that, he can become a true statesman for his own country, and consider less his political gains, and in that, find a common term with his opposition, because both of them have one common goal, which is bring freedom to their country. And I think this is a quite solid ground for them to reach a consensus, and I think that's going to happen.
Thank you.
Right. I was wondering about the which will be the paper or the rule for the Assemblée Nationale de Catalunya after the elections. So I think it's maybe for you, Montse.
Yep. What would be the rule? I think that they are probably deciding what would be their rule. I think that from the outside, I would say that any Assembly of Catalonia should have as an objective to coordinate the movement towards sovereignty. And they should try to do that from a perspective of unity, just finding some common objectives and having a plan. But I don't know whether this is what they are going to do or whether internal divisions are going to play a more prominent role in that. I would like to respond to your question because you have introduced an element which is very important in politics and also is very important when we study political mobilization, which is emotions. Political mobilization, sport, love and hate for people, even love and hate for countries, for specific things. So I think this is a very, very important issue. And when we talk about the emotional dimension and you link it to Artur Mas having thought for a moment or having thought that actually he could make a difference, it's a different way to look at issues. And I think that we should understand that he has taken a big gamble with this, and he knew it. A big risk. He didn't need all this hassle. He didn't need to go through the humiliation that now everybody says, oh, well, you know, he had just 1.5 million people behind him, and then there were no more. Well, 1.5 million is a lot. But obviously, it's a big gamble. We'll have to see what happens. But there was a miscalculation of the support, and there was also a miscalculation on the degree of unity in the pro-sovereignty front. So now it's difficult. What he has achieved is the internationalization of Catalan aspirations. This is new. What you show us in the Financial Times and in all different media in the UK and elsewhere is that people now know what's Catalonia.
This is the best,
you know. Exactly. And this is new, and this is going to have an impact. Because now, whatever happens in Catalonia, it's public. It's open. And there is an interest which didn't exist before. And in a context of democracy within the European Union, this gives some leverage to a movement of a small nation that wants to achieve independence, let's say independence, but is doing it by the rule, is doing it following democratic means, it's following a path, it's talking about what their aspirations are. Well, only achieving this is something that I don't think had been achieved in the previous 20 years of Catalan autonomy. It's something for which he has to be credited. I cannot resist mentioning, giving some data about the economic situation. Catalonia, 7.5 million people. GDP, 2,003 million euros. Fiscal deficit with Spain, 8% of Catalonian GDP, equivalent to 20,000 million euros. It would make a big difference, that. I mean, if 4% was applied, the percentage would be half. So, from an economic point of view, it's important. This has to be contrasted with the emotional arguments that our colleague here was mentioning.
Well, I think we're going to have to draw things to a close.
Sorry. If we're getting emotional, I'm getting emotional. And I'd like to respond to the gentleman before who had raised that point about, you know, being a political, this being a political shift and in this election, and what you said. And I think that's totally, totally, you know, a great point. And I think that's the, why things are so messed up now, because, you know, how what are we talking about here? What was that election about? Was it about independentism, or was it about, you know, how to run a country? So I think the shift to the left, you know, had a lot to say about, you know, the way we run the country to Iran, and then what happens with independentism. But there's one item, and if we're getting emotional and romantic, I'll put myself into that back as well. And I'd say there was one time where I saw the Catalan society pulling in together in a way that people should not rule out, which is when the statute of autonomy was, you know, put to tatters by the PP party. All the Catalan newspapers, left and right, competitors to the nth degree, really nasty, doing nasty things to each other. They came out with the same leader on the same day. So it is possible to agree to do something at once. Would it be possible, and, you know, why not dream, you know, if it's free, would it be possible that for once the politicians, and they, in the Catalan parliament they've done that as well, come together and they said, let's put how we run the country aside, and let's say, do we have a majority here who wants to have a call a referendum? Should we put all the cards on the table and have a debate, and have a proper debate, and then call the referendum and take it from there? I think that it is within the power of the Catalan parliament to unify and do something like it. And if they don't, and, you know, the majority that clearly wants that referendum, if you put the three parties together, Esquerra, CiU, and Iniciativa, I think we will only have ourselves to blame. Like, we only have ourselves to blame for 1936, you know, for, well, obviously not, no, but not only, but, you know, but there's a, that came out wrong.
That came out wrong,
but as if we have ourselves, you know, to blame ourselves for a lot, for not having unified, you know, and being able to challenge, you know, there's a lot to be said for that. And I think we will have missed an opportunity. I don't know what you think about that, whether that's possible, or you think, oh, dreamer.
I think that, well, strict with the book in your hand, you know that for a consultation, there is a law of consultations that the Catalan parliament has, but has to further develop. But in what concerns matters that affect the integrity of Spain and what in the UK would be called reserve issues, whatever question you put in a referendum has to be first approved by Madrid. Okay? Mm-hmm. This is following the law. But so, I'm just saying what the law says.
But what are you going to do? Send the tanks? I think if there's like political...
Well, if I may, in this debate, nobody has mentioned Article 2 and Article 8 of the Spanish Constitution, which are alive and well. And also, nobody has mention that we had even Tejero okay, accusing Artur Mas of sedition. For him to have a voice proves that Spain is really very democratic.
Paul, we're debating this 3 or 4 days after the election. Is it possible to reconstitute this meeting in 3 or 4 months' time?
Absolutely.
With people from Catalonia, even from Madrid, and then we...
Well, unfortunately... unfortunately, because... We need a more obedient public, is what we need. But anyway, the idea is great, and I'm very happy to do it. Unfortunately, because of the cuts, I can't afford to bring people to Barcelona. But, you know, if they're around, they'd be very welcome. I just want to say, to round off, I've learned an enormous amount this evening, and I'm immensely grateful to my colleagues here on the table, but also from those in the audience who've made, without exception, extremely positive and informative contributions. I don't think we're any further on, I fear to say. I think we're aware of the issues, and we now know more what a quagmire is, I think.
Yes.
However, I think we've all been very lucky because we have here what Pujol would call a tabla rodona de luxa, and it is absolutely true. So I'm immensely grateful to my four colleagues here, and again, as I said, to everyone else who has joined in, and everyone else for coming. I hope you'll come to other events, because as I said earlier, there's a lot of new faces, and I hope you'll all join me in thanking the four participants in the round table.